Assistant Attorney General Appellate Counsel.
Morning, Mr. Bogner. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Andrew Bogner, and I represent the appellants, David and Mary Gorgeous. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Whether Virginia Code Section 33.2-1005A applies to the reconveyance of the Gorgeous property is dispositive of this appeal. The statute is mandatory. It is specific to reconveyance. The trial court's failure to apply that subsection of the statute requires reversal of its decision. The trial court's additional ruling as to the price the Gorgeous must pay for the reconveyance of their property is also reversible error. Turning to the first point, VDOT took 26 acres from Mr. and Mrs. Gorgeous in 1994 as an advance acquisition. Subsection 1005A.
Can I ask you a hypothetical?
Yes, Your Honor.
If I bought an option to purchase a farm with stables and houses and outhouses and a lot of improvements on it, and the property was described that way, the option to purchase Justice Kelsey has on the farm is for X dollars with all this raw acreage with the stables and the houses and the guest houses and the fences, etc. And then later, all those things were taken off by the landowner. Would we interpret the option to purchase to say, well, it still applies verbatim exactly the same amount after all that value has been stripped off? It's not even the same property in terms of its original description. Would we force the option to purchase under the assumption that was then made? That wouldn't seem reasonable to me, but it sounds pretty close to your situation.
If the option to purchase described all of those improvements prior to the closing, mm-hmm. and at closing those improvements were not part of the transaction, then no, we would not go back to the option to purchase to look to see what property was conveyed or acquired and what property price was given for those items.
Good. So let's take the next stage of the hypothetical. Suppose you get to closing and the guy says, okay, well, I took off all the barns and I demolished the house and all the rest. But you know how we got to the number when we made our deal originally, Mr. Kelsey. I had so much for the barns, and I had so much, and this is the way my appraisal. You knew about that, right? Yeah, I knew about that. Well, now you got to purchase, if the option's been properly triggered and is required, you got to purchase the raw land now at the lower number. Or I say to them, I know I want to purchase, I still, and you have to give it to me now, but I get a different number now because you've taken all this stuff out. Wouldn't the whole thing fail on both sides of that?
To me, the key to that hypothetical is there is still a choice between buyer and seller at that point. There is still a choice whether to go through with that transaction or not. In this instance, Mr. and Mrs. Gorgeous don't have a choice. The Commonwealth is taking their property.
They have a choice. They don't have to purchase if they don't want to.
Well, that on the back end, at reconveyance.
Right, we're talking about an option.
Correct. I understood the hypothetical to be an option prior to the original purchase. In that scenario, there's still a choice whether to go through that closing. If the hypothetical is there's an option at the end, we are then looking at what is being reconveyed. And that's the crux of the argument that was presented to the circuit court, that the property that is subject to reconveyance is what determines the price to be paid for that property. And VDOT's argument is we can't look outside, to take Justice Kelsey's hypothetical and apply it to VDOT's argument. We can't look outside the four corners of the deed. There is one price no matter what's reconveyed, even if at an option some of that property may be taken off of reconveyance. But the statute doesn't say you have to look at the deed. The statute simply says purchase price. Purchase price is amplified by property. The property that is subject to reconveyance determines the purchase price at reconveyance.
Well, not to get picky, but it literally says original purchase price, and that presupposes a number, one number, not multiple numbers aggregated. I know your response to that is it's clear. This is not a complicated debate, actually. It's really just linguistics. But why isn't your problem the phrase original purchase price means the original purchase price, $1,150,000?
Because that purchase price does not apply to the property that remains to be reconveyed.
I don't disagree with that, and therefore I would not pay $1,150,000. But it seems reasonable that you fall back to something more fair, which is fair market value. How is that not fair?
Because you can't fall back to fair market value because the reconveyance statute is mandatory. And this court made that decision in the Windsor case in 2006. This court said, not the same situation, but conditions had changed. The original corporate owner of the property had dissolved. And VDOT's position was, circumstances have changed. We will offer you the property for fair market value. And this court said, you cannot do that. There are only two conditions in the statute, that the construction project was never commenced, and there's no other use. That's the other condition now. And when those conditions are satisfied and triggered, subsection A has to be utilized to reconvey the property.
Right, but that's the whole question we're trying to figure out. Were they triggered? Of course you're right if they were triggered.
VDOT concedes those conditions were triggered. In multiple areas of its brief, VDOT states that it agrees that subsection A entitles the Kalurgises to reconveyance of their property.
Well, true. The word condition is identified as those factors, but the real condition is the precondition, which is the phrase original purchase price.
And our position is original purchase price has to reflect back to the property that is being conveyed. And so, again, to get into linguistics, property can mean many different things. Under this court's definition of the term, under Virginia Code's definition of the term, under Black's Law Dictionary, property means real estate, it means personalty, it means improvement, it means fixtures. VDOT can alter that property in between its acquisition of it and when the conditions are met triggering reconveyance.
What about the word price?
And it's our position that price reflects back to the property that's being reconveyed, and that we have to assume the General Assembly knew in enacting this statute that property means many different things. And so the trial court based its decision on price based on its definition of the word property. The trial court ruled property means forever and always the total of the property.
From the basis of the fact that the statute says such property, it seems to me the trial court, in addition to everything Justice Kelsey has just asked you, try to determine what is the such property that is mentioned 7 or 8 times in subsection A.
I agree, Your Honor. Such property was important to the trial court's ruling. Such typically means something that's already been listed. We cited two cases in our brief that talked about the word such in a list, referencing back to something earlier, the Strawberry Hill case, the Charlin case, and those cases held that such may mean identical to something already listed. But it also may mean like or similar to something already listed. So the General Assembly knew when it enacted this statute that property meant many different things. And it's reasonable to expect that VDOT may carve up property before reconveying it. So such property refers back to the property that's being reconveyed. It's like or similar to. That's consistent with the way this court has construed that term on other occasions.
Is this property as it currently exists either like or similar to what VDOT purchased 20 years ago?
Yes, particularly with respect to the land. The land is exactly the land. And when VDOT acquired
it... But when they purchased it, it had significant improvements.
It did, and those improvements no longer exist.
And so, therefore, my question is it such property as they purchased?
It is. It is such property, just considering the term property. It's also like or similar to, because the word property means many different things. It's a bundle of items that VDOT acquired. It's not just real estate. It's also improvements.
What would happen, though, the $1,150,000 was based upon their $286,000 valuation on the land and $863,000 valuation on the improvements, right? Their appraisal.
Yes.
Suppose you had your own appraisal. And it roughly came up to $1,152,000, but you had different numbers. I'm making this up, obviously. Your appraiser has different numbers for your appraisal, and instead of $286,863,000, you had $100,000 shift. Would that mean, if you win this case, that trial judges have to sit down and decide which of the two competing appraisals should be used for this reacquisition value?
In that scenario, there would have to be some type of factual evidence taken as to which appraisal or which mechanism the parties used to get to the purchase price for the property that's being reconveyed.
Well, maybe the legislature, when they used the term price instead of value, they were saying, no, I don't want to get into that. That's, you know, the whole question in this case is who gets the benefit of the appreciation. And if it's the same thing and it's the same price, then yeah, you get the benefit of the appreciation. If it's not the same thing and you want a different price, you don't. It seems so fair. What's unfair about that from your perspective?
The unfairness is reflected in two ways. First, these are statutes that have to be strictly construed against the Commonwealth because they are derived from the Commonwealth's power of eminent domain. So there is strict construction against the Commonwealth, and they have to be applied. When they do apply, they have to be applied, which the trial court failed to do. Second, the other two states that we were able to determine that have ever considered this issue hit the nail on the head in saying any appreciation of the property, whoever loses those, the state loses out on those because of the policy rationale. Because otherwise, the state may try to acquire more property than it actually needs. That was the situation in the Farrell case in North Carolina. In that statute, to address the justice's question, in that statute, the statute actually said the Department of Transportation can acquire any property, and then it may reconvey said parcel. Said parcel is actually narrower than the term such property. But in that case, the North Carolina appellate courts allowed the reconveyance of 29 out of 34 acres originally acquired under those principles.
But at the original purchase price. We got less back, but they had to pay exactly what had been paid by the state to them.
If the court looks at the North Carolina Court of Appeals opinion, which was affirmed by the North Carolina Supreme Court, the purchase price for the pro rata portion of the property reconveyed was a pro rata portion of the original purchase price. It was 83% of the property in that case was reconveyed. The original landowners paid 83%. According to the Court of Appeals in North Carolina, and that opinion was affirmed.
It was affirmed, and I've read both of them several times, counsel, and I cannot figure out how they got to the number versus the language, because the language of the Supreme Court's opinion is repurchase for the initial award plus interest. It doesn't say a pro rata portion. It said they repurchased at the original award. I see the numbers as you do, but it doesn't match the language.
And I agree that that is the language, but if we look at the actual facts of the case, it appears that that issue was never squarely presented to that court, just like it was never squarely presented to the Minnesota Supreme Court. But reading the actual facts recited in that opinion, it is a pro rata purchase. I'd like to say the remaining time that I have for rebuttal.
All right, 2 minutes, 14 seconds.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Christopher Ott. I represent the Commissioner of Highways in this matter. The Commissioner and the other appellees in this case have asked the Court to apply Section 33.2, 1005, Subsection A, in accordance to the express and unambiguous language that was put into it by the General Assembly. The key term in the statute is the original purchase price. That is very clear. There was only one purchase price. The appellants here are asking the court to reach back and go back to the appraisal, which was not part of the final closing documents. Was basically an opinion of value that was drawn by one. It was actually one of two appraisals that was done by VDOT. The other one, to kind of follow up your question earlier, Justice Kelsey, that there was actually two appraisals done. The other one did have a higher land value and a lower value for the improvements. So there's at least two prices floating out there that
they're
commissioned by VDOT.
They both roughly get to $1,150,000.
The one with the higher land value had a lower total value, and that's why they utilized the one with the lower land value to get a total, you know, higher total of the two. I think it was roughly about, that one's slightly under $1 million, this one was $1.15 million. So it was certainly in the Coolidge's advantage to utilize the second appraisal. But the fact is, when real estate is bought, there's one purchase price. Nobody goes out and buys property saying, okay, I'm going to give you, $40,000 for the lot and $200,000 for the house or the improvements on it. You buy the property for $240,000. That is your purchase price. That's the way all these terms are commonly used, and this is clear and ambiguous. So to reach back and try to pull this number back, a number that was never even agreed to or anywise certified by Clergis, only thing he ever agreed to was the total price of $1.15 million. That's the only agreement we have here. This is just something that was informational and gave a basis as to the background of the offer that was presented to him.
Does that... The law has changed since then, because now VDOT has to do the appraisal that breaks it down?
The law has changed since 1994 when the department was required.
Right. So the problem we have here, which is, well, there was this appraisal, but it had no statutory status or whatever. Now there's a statutory requirement. Does that affect how we approach this at all?
Well, it really doesn't, because you're going back to what was required in 1994, which they're reaching back saying that's the original purchase price. Well, certainly if you're talking original purchase price, you're talking about what happened back in 1994, not what's happening in 2017. So, yes, it's true that the appraisal was not required. Obviously, any good business or any proper procedure by VDOT would, if you're buying a property over $1 million, of course you want to get it appraised. So, yes, they did do an appraisal, but it was not statutorily required at that time.
Let me ask you this. It's not raised, but I'm happy to have your thoughts as I think this case through. The Article 1, Section 11 prohibits the state from taking more private property than necessary to achieve the stated public use. And so here, there never was a public use for this property. There was an anticipated public use, and it never came to fruition. And so, under his argument, it obviates any constitutional problem because the original owner gets it back. But is there a potential constitutional problem if the owner doesn't get to purchase the property back at the price that was paid for it? Because then the commissioner could have violated this constitutional provision. I'm just not sure where it takes us, but I want to make sure we don't run into constitutional trouble down the road.
I don't believe that should be a problem, because certainly the amount of land that was acquired at the time was clearly anticipated to be needed for the project.
Right.
I mean, initially, when this advanced acquisition took place, the actual pathway of the Charlottesville bypass wasn't even completely laid out. This entire transaction was initiated by Clergis, not by the Department of Transportation. In fact, the property was initially, when you look at the year of correspondence, and you look at pages 70 through 78 in the appendix, you'll see that the property actually was an agricultural district, which Clergis voluntarily took out of the district just for the purpose that it could be acquired as an advanced acquisition. And if you look from the letter from Secretary of Transportation and Ray Pathel, he said, well, that will probably bear on the final pathway of the anticipated bypass. So as far as the constitutional problem taking more than needed, I don't really think that was a problem. It was only until 2014 when the CPB finally passed the resolution defunding the project was it no longer to be needed, and that's when the Department of Transportation then commenced to sell.
And they sold it, and ergo, by selling it, they'd never, it solved the problem of acquiring more than necessary.
That's correct.
So it was essential, a consensual transaction.
Yes, completely.
VDOT showed up and snatched it on a quick take.
That's correct. But the project was not even ongoing yet at that time. So but it was planned. I think the initial resolution to start the studies to lay out the eventual pathway of the bypass was commencing, but there were alternative routes planned, and there were a number of plans, but they were still in the works back when this property was acquired.
Can I follow that up with the thumb on the scale canon of construction of construing narrowly the government's capacity to confiscate land even though it pays for it? Would that even apply to a situation like this, a consensual transaction where the eminent domain power is not, in fact, the government power that is being involuntarily foisted on a private landowner?
Well, I would submit that I think this should be viewed in a little different lens than you would normal a involuntary taking when we go through Title 25.1 and take the property involuntarily. I mean, certainly in this case, nobody was going to knock on Mr. Clurge's door in 1994 telling him that they were going to take his property. In fact, but for if this property had not been acquired, they may have ultimately chosen another route and the property may have never been affected. So I think you do have to look through this a different lens than you would if this was an involuntary taking, the offer's refused and we're now going to court. So I think this was, every phase of this entire history of this case has been basically initiated by Mr. Clurges, including the buying back of all the improvements on the property 3 years later when all the improvements were stripped off. I mean, these are improvements that initially were $863,000 paid for, but since they were no real use to the department, we were sold back to him for a salvage value of only $30,000. And, ultimately the house was not moved off the property, but it was stripped of all its fixtures, and the guest house was removed to his remaining property. So certainly he got a substantial value of his property back, with that very token payment, but at the same time.
Did the guest house have a value in your appraisal of anything over or under $30,000?
I believe any guest house in that part of Charlottesville had to be worth far more than $30,000 even in 1994. But I don't think there's a breakdown. At least I have not gone back looking at the appraisal that closely, but I think it's a reasonable inference that property was worth far more than $30,000.
What exactly is the department's argument? At trial, you argued that A does apply. The court found that B applies. Do I understand you this morning to be back to arguing that A does apply?
The position is that really, I think the best way to construe the entire 33.2, 1005, and you're putting A and B together, is that essentially A creates the right of verb on these narrow types of cases when the property is bought by advance acquisition and the project itself is not built for 20 years. I mean, we're not talking a common occurrence here. These cases only pop up maybe once a decade, sometimes even less than that. So this is not something that has, a lot of utility as far as how we do this. I think the best way to apply this is that he has the right to revert, and it is at the option of the landowner if he wishes to get the property back for the original purchase price, that it's his right to do so. In this case, it's never been denied that he has the right to. But the problem we have here is he doesn't want to follow his part of the statute. And that is, he doesn't want to pay the original purchase price. He wants to submit, place instead his own financial terms, which is trying to pull this figure out of the appraisal for 1994, which was never a purchase price of anything.
So your interpretation of the statute is house or no house, VDOT is owed $1.5 million.
No, ma'am. No, that's not really correct here. What VDOT
or 1.1 million?
Yeah, he was supposed to proceed under A, but VDOT's position is A is not his only remedy under the statute. He has the rights under B to at least receive the property at fair market value if he wishes to have the property returned to him.
I mean, he literally can do one or the other, but it would make no sense to do A.
Your Honor, if I was him, I would go with B. It's a little cheaper. But the point is, it really should be the option of the land of the prior owner decide if he wants, if it's in his advantage to go with A, he has the right to do A.
I guess in
perfect
theory,
in this class of owner,
real estate markets could dramatically go contrary to all of our instincts, and in some cases, A might be better than B.
In most cases, A is better than B because a lot of advanced acquisitions are just raw land, so they're not going to change, so they're only going to go up. Other instances we've had are cases where the improvements on the property were removed, but they were already obsolete, old, out of date, or just inconsistent with the highest and best use of the property. So the removal probably was more of an enhancement than a detriment. I mean, this case itself is very, very unique in the fact that the improvements really were the real value, more so than land. I've been representing VDOT since 1981. That's the first time I've ever heard of it happening. So this is not a situation that's often seen. But I think the only way to apply the statute fairly for everybody, the Commonwealth, the landowner, whatever, it's essentially put the ball in the landowner's pocket, and it's important to say, he can either go under A, he has the right to, he has the right to revert, but if that doesn't work financially, because the situation has this option here, that he can then go to B and still get his property returned to him, but get it for fair market value. And in this case, if the fair market value that VDOT estimated, which certainly could be negotiated, but that's the fair market value. I mean, even if it's A,
there's another difference, though, between A and B, isn't there? I mean, the landowner can't force the sale under B because it says if the department offers for sale the property and the property is suitable for independent development. So the landowner can't, under B, say, VDOT, you have to sell the property to me at fair market value. VDOT has to offer the sale. So it's basically a right of first refusal. And you have to meet the second test of the property is suitable for you.
And that is correct, but I think the court can take notice of the fact that if a project has not been built in 20 years and VDOT's holding this land and if it's capable of independent development, VDOT's going to sell it. I mean, they're not going to, if they get a request to sell it, they're going to sell it.
And constitutionally, may have to. Mm-hmm.
That's correct under the Constitutional Amendment. It's a very good point. And I think they would be bound to have to sell the property. So I think B is a perfectly viable option for the prior owner to have the property reconveyed to him. So finally, I saw there was some reliance in the Flourish's brief about those cases from one case from North Carolina and Minnesota. And what's interesting about it, if you look at the notes from case Minnesota, they actually cite a statute that does allow the original purchase price to be prorated when not all the land is being returned, which is something the General Assembly could do if they, in their wisdom, they decide to do so. But they're relying on statutes that are different than what we have here in Virginia. And for that reason, this case is cited. They also have a completely different background, and they were involved in the main cases as opposed to voluntary conveyance. I just don't think those cases really apply, but if you look at that Minnesota case, if they really believe that should be the law of Virginia, then that's the job of the General Assembly to do that, because they could pass legislation to do something different than what they've done so far.
And they have been fairly attentive to the needs of landowners.
That's correct, Your Honor. Every February, March, we're looking out for those, so they keep us pretty busy. I see I'm down to 5 seconds, so thank you very much. I appreciate my opportunity to appear before you.
Rebuttal.
Thank you. I just want to make clear, we did point out in a footnote that the Minnesota case had an additional statute that applied. We cited that case for the policy reasons that the Supreme Court of Minnesota discussed. The same argument that the Commonwealth just presented was presented to this court in Windsor, that it can pick and choose when to use these statutes and which subsection to apply. They've shifted it now to say the owner can pick and choose which statute to apply. This court held we cannot do that. When subsection A applies, we have to apply subsection A.
The question is not whether A applies. The question is what does A do when it does apply? They say it applies to the price. You say it applies to the appraisal value of some of the property, but not all of the property. Isn't that the whole case, have I oversimplified it?
I think if you wanted to distill it to an elevator speech, that's it.
What about a judicial opinion?
I think you could distill it to that in a judicial opinion as well. Okay. And that was the argument we made in front of the circuit court. And it's not that we're saying you have to use the appraisal. We're saying there's no one document that says original purchase price across the top. There's just not. The court has to look at something. The parties have to look at something to derive the original purchase price.
Did you get a check?
Certainly, Your Honor.
That's not the original purchase price?
But again, the statute has to be considered as a whole. And the statute speaks of property that's being acquired and property that's being reconveyed. When the property that's being reconveyed is not the whole of the property that was acquired, then the original purchase price that must be paid for the reconveyance cannot be the whole of the purchase price that was originally paid. For instance, if VDOT took...
Isn't it possible that the Virginia General Assembly simply never contemplated that issue? We know that the Minnesota legislature did contemplate it. And if Virginia is silent on that issue, then we could come to the conclusion that Virginia just simply never thought about this. Correct?
We could come to that conclusion, and then as a matter of law, courts construing these statutes have to determine what they mean. And
well, we can't construe it beyond, if we conclude that the General Assembly meant to deal with nothing other than the reconveyance of the whole, we cannot construe it an iota beyond that.
May I address that?
Absolutely.
My response would be, courts cannot construe statutes in a way that would impair them. And these statutes are designed to put the owner in as good a position as he possibly could have been in had his land not been taken. There's only one way to do that. Allow him to buy back the land that's reconveyed for the purchase price of that land. If the court holds that the General Assembly never considered that, and therefore the owner's out of luck and must pay fair market value of $500,000 more, that impairs the statute and defeats the purpose. And for those reasons, we would ask the court to reverse.
The court is adjourned.
All rise.